What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the number one sports podcast in the Southeast Michigan, Detroit area. I'm your host, Connor. You're listening to Teeing It Up with C and V. Yes, Connor stands for C, and I'm here with the V himself, Vladdy. What's going on, man? Sort of a state of the union, the way this weekend went in many respects, sports-wise.
Yeah, I'm cold, cold and sad. I think maybe if I go back to last year's Lions playoff season ending, I was a little bit more upset and angry. This is just more sadness, but we'll get into that. I'm cold and I'm sad. How are you?
I'm all right. It is like, it's tough, man. These cold days, like, I got up, I went to work, I got home, and you're stuck inside. And I guess there's like the equivalent of that in like Arizona and some other southern places where it's 110 plus in the summer. But this is pretty brutal. We've got one more day of it being like absurdly cold, but most of the people listening know it's cold already, so I guess we can get off the topic. But I'm okay. I'm also cold and a little sad as we talk on this Tuesday evening. So we got a full show as usual. We're going to talk about we're going to start with the Lions and kind of the depressing aspect of everything that was on Saturday. We'll cover the other games. We're going to go over a preview for the championship weekend, and we're going to go over the coaching vacancies that were filled since we last talked and kind of go over and summarize and rank where we see the rest of those vacancies going. Then we'll hit up the national championship. Ohio State gets it done over Notre Dame, and we'll close with Michigan State basketball, which is a happier note the way they played the last week. So that's today's show. We can get into it. Lions 45, Commanders 31. I don't really
like, scores were flipped. We did not get to
yeah,
45,
sorry.
remember.
Cool. That would have been nice, huh? Commanders 45, Lions 31. Jaden Daniels punches the Lions in the mouth. They come in and provide what's been the upset of the series, the entire playoffs so far. And the Lions 15-2 season, second year division championship, goes for naught. First time being the one seed, say what you want, it's all for naught. Do you want to hear an interesting fact, though? I'll say this about the Lions before we get into how sad and depressing and what the actual game, the crazy game it was. At the very least, it was an entertaining game. The bye number one seeds are now 12-8 all time. That's it.
Really?
So, yeah,
Like
I
in the
heard
first round or just in general?
In their first game. So,
Okay.
Yeah. So, surprising stat there. But
hold on.
anyways.
I don't believe this.
Yeah.
Other than the 49ers who came in and kicked the shit out of one of those Green Bay teams with Aaron Rodgers, what other one seeds have lost right off the bat?
I don't know. I just heard the stat. I didn't go through and look at who were the one seeds last year.
San Fran and Kansas City, probably, or San Fran and Baltimore.
It was Baltimore, yeah.
But they won a game.
They
I
won.
don't
They
believe
did
that
win a
stat
game.
the way you presented it. Maybe those are the right numbers. It's just you're missing some criteria. That does it. I don't think 8-1 seeds in the new format have lost their first game in the divisional round. Again,
I also don't think it's right because had they really been doing the one bye for 10 years? I don't think so.
I definitely don't think they have.
Yeah. I'll have to go back and maybe this one says 11-7 going into it. So
fair enough.
all right, whatever. This is irrelevant to what we actually want to talk about. The Lions lose. It's all for naught. And we can't have anything good. I don't really even – I'm going to let you talk about the game because it's just going to be sad to kind of go through and see what was. But there was just so many blemishes. They weren't ready to play. They expected this one to go in their way. They expected Kansas City, Washington, the Commanders to come in and just fold. And they did anything but that. Jaden Daniels, I said it last week on the podcast, his pulse is 65 beats per minute. He, at all times, he is no no scaredness, no rookiness, if that's not a word. And he showed it. And I'll let you kind of get into the actual game now.
Yeah, I'll talk game and then we'll talk about talking points, big changes, and kind of we can play the blame game in a sense. You start out the game with a three and out, with David Montgomery on all three plays, which that's a big red flag right off the start. You had Jahmyr Gibbs putting up a all pro level kind of play in the 2 months that Monty wasn't playing, and he comes back probably not fully healthy. And he plays the first three plays. Very big question mark. Then, thankfully, your defense made one of their only two stops of the day. So it was still 0-0 when you got the ball back. And then you remembered that Jahmyr Gibbs is on your team and you were able to move it, go down, score a touchdown. I guess I forgot to mention Amik Robertson breaking his arm on the second or third snap of the game. That kind of changed what we were probably thinking of doing on the defensive side because you're already missing half of your corners and you lose probably your best one on the third play of the game. That hurt. And then, I mean, Washington kicks a field goal, so I guess you want to call that 1.5 stops. Sure, you're up 7-3, and then kind of the turnovers began.
Second quarter.
The first turnover, we're driving again, third and one at like the 20 of Washington, and Jared Goff lines up in shotgun in an empty set, which is not Detroit Lions football. It is not the type of football that was working for you in that game. It's not the type of football that's worked for you in the 4 years that you've been there. So that's a very big question mark. What are you doing? But strip sack, as we know. Then teams kind of trade some touchdowns. I think someone needs to take the ankle weights off of Kirby Joseph. Him trying to catch Terry McLaurin on that pass was kind of sad to watch. It's like, come on, like he had the angle and he just couldn't run, for lack of a better term. We end up down 17-14. Goff then tries to throw into some crazy tight window that never really was there. And he wasn't even pressured on this throw. So like I'd understand it if there's a guy who's trying to kill him and he releases it. Didn't understand this one. But there's a pick six. You donate 7 points to the other team. Suddenly you're down 24-14. And then on the very next drive, I think is when you had Goff in the medical tent getting looked at for the concussion, and that's when we ran the Jameson Williams trick play that was taken to the
Yep.
house. That was kind of awesome. You thought, okay, this is sick. And just as quickly as we scored, we kind of gave it right back to them, and it became 31-21. And it was kind of like we were joking, we're watching the game together. We had a bunch of friends over to my house, and the over almost hit in the first half. I think the over was like 54 or 55 or something, and we're sitting at 52 with the Lions having a chance to score more points.
Yeah, it was the highest scoring second quarter in NFL playoff history.
And Lions had a chance to kind of go down, get some more points right before the half, which could have been crucial because Washington was going to start with the
Good call.
ball. This is where Jared Goff throws his third pick of the day. Or his third, this was the third turnover, his second pick of the day, with Mikey saying we're still kind of jumping a pass in the end zone, where I think you can kind of play the blame game where maybe Goff threw it a second too late. But then there's on the flip side, Jameson Williams sat there as if this thing was like entitled to end up in his hands. It's like, dude, you got to attack the football. Mike Sainer still attacked the football, and that's why he ended up with the interception. That kind of killed us. We went down into the half by 10. From there, you had actually, once again, you had a chance to get back into the game. You had your second true stop of the game with, I think it was a punt or a turnover. I forget which of the two was the first half, which of the set two was the second half. I think it was the punt first. And then we score and we make it 31-28. And you think, oh my God, we're back in the game. And this is where it completely gets out of hand. Washington goes on a long drive, fourth and two at the goal line, and we get caught with 12 men on the field, and we give them a free first down without even them having to run an actual play. I don't understand what Dan Campbell was doing. Everybody saw it. The defense, you could see them. They're jumping around. They don't know what's going on. Tom Brady's on the broadcast going, "Hey, there's too many guys. Time out, time out, time out." Dan doesn't call it. Yeah, give them the free first. They score, I think it was two plays later or three plays later at that point. And we're down 10. And then we follow up that drive with an attempted trick play. We can say at best, a ridiculously stupid decision at worst with Jameson Williams, a guy who we've rightly talked about on this podcast before, doesn't make very good decisions.
Yeah. On and off the field now.
Yeah, if you want to talk about on the field, what his touchdown on the trick play, he's out there doing
Yeah.
some air thrusts onto the ground. It's like, how is that not flagged? How's he not been fined? But you're letting that guy throw with your season on the line instead of your quarterback. I don't understand that concept. So there's that. He throws the pick. At that point, Washington goes right down the field again, makes it 45-28, and at that point, game was out of reach. There was obviously a couple more possessions, but it didn't really mean anything because it was just clock getting killed. Goff, I guess, threw the fifth turnover of the night right at the end of the game, but again, that it was over at that point. That was one of those where it's like you're not really going to say, "Oh, the quarterback threw a pick," even though it's just a Hail Mary at the end of the first half. Like that's just part of the sport at times. An absolutely just
Crushing.
disparaging, sputtering end to what should have been a Super Bowl appearance for us at the very least. You mention it, this is a season that now goes to absolute shit because 15-2 is cool, but you don't get to hang 15-2 banners. You can put up a division banner for all we care, but no one's gonna remember this team.
No.
You look 5 years down the line, the only people who are gonna remember it are Detroiters who are sitting there and thinking to themselves, how didn't we get anything done, or how did we not get more out of that season?
And even the Detroiters, I think, will remember last year's team more. Not even just because they made it one game farther, but just because of what it meant, the on the rise aspect of it, and the fact that they established that culture and that what this was going to be, and then to essentially not be able to build off that this year will make it just that much more forgettable.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of the opportunity. I understand that you had injuries, or we had injuries on the defensive side, but you're still at home as the one seed. That is not an opportunity that comes by very often. I don't think that's an opportunity that we'll have next season. But we can get into that in the off when we talk about our offseason stuff. And everybody knows it. I mean, you've got Dan Campbell in the postgame presser, damn near crying on the podium. You've got the players kind of walking around, just they don't understand what's going on. Fans, you and I, everyone just kind of sitting there in utter disbelief of what just happened. This was one of the weakest NFCs I think we've ever seen.
Yep.
Kind of your usual suspects in a sense, Dallas and San Francisco. They got the injury bugs. They kind of took themselves out of contention. And what else? I mean, it's a rookie. I mean, look, he's sensational. He's the best rookie quarterback we've ever seen, probably ever. But you're playing at home, and I think you mentioned the start of this that there was no preparation from this team. Where do we go from here?
Yeah, I mean, we can start pointing fingers. We can, I mean, I'll just say this from the outset to go off the preparation thing, that not only that, but Dan Quinn outdanned Dan Campbell. And he came into this program, or pro, I hate saying program for NFL teams, but this NFL, this organization, there we go. How about that? And went from, one of the worst defenses in the league to a defense that was respectable, one of the worst offenses in the league to one of the best offenses, or what, sorry, one of the worst offenses in the league last year to one of the best offenses in the league last year. They only won four games last year to turn it around and win 12 games and be in an NFC championship. He goes for it on fourth down. He's aggressive. He's a defensive coach that has an identity on defense. Goes in and hires a guy that he knows and gives Cliff Kingsbury, I don't want to say a second chance because a second chance would mean him being a head coach again, but a resurgence and a reminder on why this guy is a special play caller, and mix that with a generation, what's shaping up to be a generational talent, and you get what essentially what we thought last year was for the Lions now, for the Washington Commanders. And that all just goes into my point of they were just came and ready to play, and the Lions looked like they spent the off week not preparing and not. And I hate the it's I feel like it's such a cop out to go and say like, oh, like Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn were more focused on interviews than
Yeah, I don't
coaching.
believe that.
I don't understand how that can be like completely true. Yeah, maybe he was 99% in it instead of 100, but was that really the difference in the game? Probably not. I think just you just kind of flopped from a, and this is why I actually put more blame on this game in on the offensive side in terms of even though they scored 31 points with Ben Johnson and Jared Goff, because while Aaron Glenn got absolutely trounced over, I credit most of this to what I was worried about all year long, and I think a lot of Lions fans, especially after the Vikings game, just forgot about it, that they were playing with a lot of guys that shouldn't have been out there in an NFL game. And that just came to fruition. And add that on top of the fact that you can't turn the ball over in the play. I don't care who you're playing, you're not going to be able to turn the ball over. We'll say four times, just because, like we said,
Sure.
the fifth one was in garbage time, but four times. And we're going to talk about it with some of the other games. And that was the difference in probably the biggest game of the weekend on Sunday night. And it was the difference here in this game. So I point most more of the blame towards the offensive side. And say what you want about Ben Johnson, he called some great trick plays in this game that works. He's had some great schemes all season for the last three seasons. Unacceptable in two facets, like you mentioned, I almost said the Gibbs throw, the Williams throw, and the fact that you were given. I know he double ended up, I think it was 14-7 in terms of the split for carries between Gibbs and Montgomery, but a sports podcast I listened to, the guy's a Commanders fan, going into the game said, I almost like seeing like Montgomery in there, because if I have to take more carries where Jahmyr Gibbs is off the field, then I'm more confident in the Commanders than I would be if Jahmyr Gibbs, you're telling me I got to face Jahmyr Gibbs every play like he down the stretch there, what the Lions were doing. And I think you saw that, and they were a little, and I hate like being like that. That makes it sound like David Montgomery sucks or he's a bad player, and that's not the case. But why not roll with what's been working, and why not roll with the healthier hand at the very least? And especially like you said early on in that game, it just didn't make a lot of sense. It didn't seem like Ben Johnson, although he was calling trick plays, although some of them were working, it just felt like they weren't really ready. And Jared Goff faced a lot of pressure that whole night, and the offensive line, for as great as they've been, is going to be one of the bigger question marks, I think, going into this offseason. And we'll get into, the offseason. I guess it's here, but we won't do a deep dive in this episode now. But I guess that's my spiel on where I want to put the blame. It's just so sad. I could talk about how I blame everybody but myself as a fan till I go pink in the face. So.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you. This is on the offensive side. The defense was what it was. You knew what it was. You knew your defense wasn't going to stop anybody with a pulse. So you have to play around that. Turning it over four times is never going to be playing around that. Giving 7 points directly to the other team on one of those turnovers is never playing around it. You mentioned the Gibbs Montgomery debate. Like I said, I started with it. Here's some fun stats. On the first drive, we had three plays for -3 yards when David Montgomery was in for all three of those plays. On the second drive, Gibbs had three touches and he put up 47 yards on those three touches. Little bit of disparity there between kind of results and outcomes with which your guys are. We're absolutely correct where I don't understand the logic of why you put David Montgomery in. I don't understand I don't even want to say anything else because there is I don't it's incomprehensible. Like, you're right, David Montgomery is not a bad player. As a matter of fact, I love Dave Montgomery. He's been an incredible upgrade on Jamal Williams. We've said it week in, week out, what he can bring to this team. But in that moment, coming off the injury with how good Jahmyr Gibbs, and against that team, if you're playing Baltimore and you're staring at Michael Pierce and Madubuike and all those edge rushers, maybe you need a power guy. I can understand that, but against this Washington team that just gives up yards on the ground for fun, like it's Halloween candy, how are you not running Jahmyr Gibbs? And not just not like playing him. 14 carries in a football game is kind of stupid. I understand we were trailing for most of it, but even every carry was 6, 7, 12, 8. You were never in a bad spot with a Jahmyr Gibbs carry.
Well,
Never.
just it goes into that like stat you read, I think after one of the two losses in the regular season of games they lose is when Goff has to throw the ball 40 plus times, and that's what
And he
that
got to
game kind of
40.
felt like.
He got to 40 on Saturday
And
there.
like you said, a part of that was because you were troweling the entire game, but it's just not how the Lions won, and that's not how they were gonna win it. Like this team was built to win, unfortunately, on
No,
offense.
and let's continue the preparation talk. I mentioned it, and I didn't go too far when we're doing the game recap, but 3rd and 1 at the 20-yard line, and you line up in an empty set shotgun. Who do you think you are? Like, for a team that sits there and has pounded their chest of, we're the Lions, we're gonna bite your kneecap, and we know who we are. How do you line up in an empty set on 3rd and 1? You've got a lunatic coach who goes for it every single time. How are you not running two straight power dives? Or, and granted, we kind of complained about this, I think it was 2 weeks ago in the last game. Can we run a QB sneak? I hate the concept of a tush push, but can we try it sometime? You can't fucking stop it. Why aren't we doing that? So I don't understand how you do that. Should Jared Goff protect the football a little better? Of course he should. But he should never be in that situation where you're calling that kind of play in that kind of situ in that moment. So that's kind of despicable.
One thing with the Jared Goff, it's kind of where I wanted to go next, is I see a lot, it's Dan Campbell and Jared Goff. And I see a lot of like, and I'm necessarily haven't been like Motor City Dan guy. I've been a fan and he's totally built a culture here and I respect that. And same with Jared Goff. I wasn't like, oh my God, he's the guy, we have to give him $50 million. But I hate the, and I'm sure it's a lot of it is casuals of like, there, I see a lot of stuff on Twitter from Detroit people and social media in general of just like, now you know Goff's not the guy. Now you know Dan Campbell's not the guy to get you over the hump. I don't necessarily feel that way after that loss, but it definitely puts pressure on them moving forward, specifically Dan Campbell, in that he's going to have to prove that he can consistently hire good assistants in case he's going to lose, his. Both of his coordinators possibly here. He's already lost one. He's going to have to establish culture as they continue to not be able to pay for everybody as everybody gets good and more guys get off their rookie contracts here. And we're going to see how long that culture lasts. But I don't necessarily think this means that Dan Campbell is a loser or is a bad coach. And I don't necessarily think just because Jared Goff played this game, that doesn't mean he's the guy that can't win you a Super Bowl, because he was 3 points away from doing that from what I consider to be a situation that Detroit could truly build themselves if they haven't already, to be honest.
Yeah, so two things on there. You're right with the Dan Campbell thing. This is kind of where he'll show that he makes the correct hires. And as a guy who's been critical of him, as a guy who was, albeit influenced by some liquor on Saturday night, critical of him maybe more than he should have been. Well, this is myself speaking here. But you go back to when he fired Anthony Lynn in year one and the offense improved right away. So he's gotten involved before and he's interjected himself and he's seen credible results. So that gives me faith that what he's going to do is correct. However, and this is where what I said last night in kind of our little friend, or not last night, Saturday night in our little friends group chat, which I also think holds weight, is he makes some incredibly boneheaded decisions. And it's not just the fourth down stuff. It's sometimes some lunatic challenges, sometimes some lunatic some decisions. How are you not taking a timeout on 4th and 2? How? That's That is what one of those
Yeah.
unforgivable, borderline fireable offenses. Obviously, we're not saying fire him, but that's one of those where in the moment, you've got one play to get off the field and completely change everything. You get your crowd back into it, your team gets back into it. And most importantly, you get the ball with your offense that, yeah, they had a bad game, they had some turnovers, but for all season, put up one of the best offensive seasons by a team ever. You give them the chance to go back and take the lead. I don't understand how you don't even like, did he not realize it? And if that's the case, that's even worse. How do you not know you have 12 guys on the field? You're the head coach.
Yeah. And maybe we're, do you think it's like we're harder or it's we're just more scared and like more aware of a head coach that doesn't call plays on either side, and that because he can lose assistance more easily, because essentially really what's only on him during the game is gameplay like that, essentially
Game
more or
management,
less,
yeah.
that you kind of are more aware of it and kind of have a shorter straw on a guy like that, as opposed to like a Shanahan who calls plays, a McVay who calls plays, of LaFleur who calls plays. I'm just naming off some of the best coaches that all call plays, basically.
I think there might be some truth to that. I also think part of it
Andy
might just
Reid
be,
calls plays. Sorry.
you know, there might be some truth that I don't, I'm critical because he's the head coach. Everything falls under him.
Yeah.
Again, no one's, I'm not saying fire the guy.
No.
But questions I think can rightfully be asked of what's going on and kind of,
Definitely.
and the other thing that, and this is where may, this is, I don't think this is more of a common sense amongst people or some kind of consensus thought process, but this irks me is I'm not a fan of one trick ponies. I'm not a fan of the guys who say, I'm just going to go for every fourth down on planet Earth and without ever taking into account situations because situations are situational.
Yeah.
No two of them are made alike. And that's where I think I get a little bit more critical of the guys where I'm just afraid that someone they're going to people are going to find them out. And maybe we'll see that with these next round of coaching hires and we go into next season with some defensive players still trying to come back from injury and we're just an absolute dumpster fire. But I am a little worried that we get found out because his game plan is his game plan. And I kind of said it, while it perfectly works to take us out of the depths, it might not be enough to take us to the top. But there's time to talk about that. You mentioned kind of the assistant coaches. Obviously, Ben Johnson's already gone. I'll talk a little bit about him, not necessarily in a blame thing, but what I saw with some Lions fans, where it's like, well, this, like you said, this guy, he wasn't trying or he was deliberately throwing. It's like, dude, he's a professional.
Yeah.
He wasn't deliberately throwing. Do I agree with the calls? Absolutely not. Again, Jameson Williams, your boneheaded wide receiver throwing the most important pass of your season is not how I wanted my season to end. No, I don't think anyone wants their season to end like that. So it is what it is, but I hate when majority of Lions fans don't understand how the sport works. And it's like, well, we need to change the rules so coordinators can't interview. It's like, dude, this has always been the case. It has always
Yeah.
been like this. You don't get to start acting like the victim the first time it's ever actually happened. You want to hear a fun stat that I heard today? Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn will be the second one, but Ben Johnson is the first coordinator to leave Detroit for a head coaching job since the 1960s.
Jesus.
Like, you don't get to sit here and act like the victim the first time it happened. That's what happens when you're a good team. People want your guys.
Right.
So you don't get to turn and say, "Well, it's not fair." Would you like him to be more like Cliff Kingsbury? Absolutely. Like, I don't. I'm sure you've kind of seen what Cliff said. He's like, "I'm not doing any interviews. I'm focused on this run." Would I
Yeah.
like Ben Johnson to do that? Absolutely. Does it irk me that 24 hours after the season ends, he's already taken another job and he's pulling up staffers like Dennis Allen and other guys? Yeah, that's a little frustrating. We're not going to sit here and pretend like it's never happened to anybody else.
Yeah. No, I like that from calling out Lions fans. I will, Cliff Kingsbury is a little different because he's kind of said he wants like a mental res like prior to this cycle even be like happened. He said he kind of wants like a mental reset before he goes over and takes another head coaching job like that, because it was kind of just such a
Well, he already did his mental reset. Didn't he run off to Thailand for a couple of years or
That's what
something?
I mean, but like he's I think he's a little more, I don't want to say fragile is not even what I'm trying to say, but like a little more conscientious now of what he is and what he's going wants to do. I just think that a little different situation between those two guys. But
Absolutely. And like I said, that's why it's like, is that the motto? Like, of course, I would love it if both coordinators said, I am here to finish a mission. I'm not going to be distracted or whatnot. But at the same time, I understand how the sport works. I understand how humans work. Am I going to interview for a promotion from another company while I'm currently working for General Dynamics? Yeah, I probably would if someone came and asked me to. That doesn't mean I'm not there for General Dynamics. It just means I'm going to be interested in something better.
right.
The last thing, maybe I'm missing something, but the last thing that I was thinking that I wanted to talk about is Jaden Daniels himself, because we've spent so much time talking about Lions this, Lions that. And while that's fair, I do still think we were the better team. What he did, his ability to, like you say, stone cold killer, sit in the face of pressure, deliver short, deliver medium, deliver deep. He was able to take off when he needed to. He was able to extend plays when he needed to. He could find guys on broken plays. That was an incredible performance. And again, it was against your local YMCA power lifters. It's not like what we were throwing out onto the field at that point was not exactly 85 Bears or the Ray Lewis and Ed Reed Ravens. No. But he still had to do it, and he did. And he did everything correctly. So kudos to him. He's, again, like I said, that's probably the best rookie quarterback season I've ever seen, surpassing CJ Stroud, and maybe he even surpassed CJ Stroud before this playoff victory, just with the way he actually played. And I guess the last thing I want to have, if we want to end this on a positive note, and I was thinking about this. So hear me out. Maybe the Detroit Lions are like Michigan football in college. In 2021, you show up to the playoffs. You're happy to be there. You're the underdogs. You get beat by a better team like San Francisco. Then next year, you show up. You think you're hot shit. And TCU punches you in the mouth. And Washington punches you in the mouth. And then the year after, you finally get it done.
Yeah.
Now all we need is to start cheating to do that.
Yeah. Connor Stallions, where you at? Yeah, he's definitely a Lions fan too. So he'd be willing. It's a
Yeah,
little
but that
hard.
was just something that I was like kind of killing time and looking back, and it's like
Good
obviously
comp.
you don't lose the first game because like Michigan never competed against Georgia in their first game, but
Yeah.
whereas we did compete against the 49ers, just threw it away in 30 minutes of just horror show football. But
And
it
won
was an
two playoff
interesting
games.
comp that I thought maybe if we wanted to end the Detroit Lions depression talk with a positive, maybe the Lions will win it all next year.
Yeah, I like that. We're just gonna build off of that. All right, let's talk about some other games. The other game on Saturday, Chiefs 23, Texans 14, Taylor Swift, Caitlin Clark, Chiefs Magic, Voodoo, whatever you want to call it, at full effect. Ooh, I mean, it's easy to say, and we're gonna get into the refs and Patrick Mahomes, but Patrick Mahomes is that guy. He gets it when it needs to. Gets it done when it needs to be done. Travis Kelce, oh, I haven't had a 100-yard game all season. Boom, 100 yards and a touchdown. They just get it done when it needs to get done. And I'll credit Houston's defense in that. And I know that you're going to say, well, the Chiefs' offense isn't that good. They don't have a 30-point game, and they still don't.
No.
The Commanders' offense held them at bay for a lot of it. If it weren't for some unfortunate calls, which we'll get into too specifically. They really battled all night, and even CJ Stroud and the Texans. I don't know. It was a valiant effort, I thought, and the Texans really had a chance in this game. And if it weren't for the Chiefs, voodoo magic.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about voodoo magic. It started with the very first kickoff where the
Right.
guy fumbles it, and it's like, well, what are we doing here?
The Texans are punching coaches.
But the Chiefs looked like a team at the beginning, especially whose starters hadn't played in a month.
Yeah.
Though, like you look at that very first drive. I think it was Pacheco's dropping passes. Mahomes has got a receiver not wide open, but he's got a step and a half on his corner. Mahomes overthrows him. Maybe the line starts off half a step slow. They started slow, and that's why they had to kick field goals on their first two possessions. Granted, the second possession was aided by some phantom calls. I'm not going to get overly into this yet because I think it's a segment that's worth its own, or segment. It's a discussion worth its own topic. But Texans offense couldn't get much going in the first half either. But they were at least able to slightly move the ball. I think I saw or I heard a Romo talking. He was like, the Texans got at least one first down on every single drive of the game, or at least every single drive until right at the end. So they were able to kind of move it. They just can never sustain drives. Kyme Fairbairn kind of had a stinker. Missing is an understatement. He almost kicked that ball out of bounds, like flat out on the 48-yard field goal. And then he misses the extra point, which could have tied the game 13-13 in the second half. Obviously Kelce got his touchdown. Granted, it was from some blown coverage. Overall, I mean, like you said, it's just the playoff Kelce, the playoff Mahomes, the Chiefs voodoo magic, the Taylor Swift, Caitlin Clark friendship slash just media market driven whatever. What are you supposed to do? I think the only talking point is like they're a better football team than the Texans. Like we're about to get into refs. I'm not saying they won because of the refs. I'm just saying I am tired of watching Patrick Mahomes in particular. I hate the way quarterbacks in general get protected. I think some of it's outrageous. Where like if I slap you on the helmet, it's 15 yards. It's like let's be real. That's not a roughing the passer. But the way Mahomes gets officiated, the way Mahomes gets protected, the way, and he knows it too, and he
That's the problem.
instigates
That's what
some
I
of
was
it.
going to say.
He instigates the stuff. This is
That's the problem.
the NBA where I'm jumping into the guy who's jumping at me, and I'm getting free extra free throws, and I'm taking 15 yards. It's pathetic. The first call, you want to say it looked bad in real time, sure, but when you slow it down, the guy never actually made contact with Mahomes' head. And the second one, Jesus fucking Christ. He's sitting there jumping around doing what Tom Brady says. You want to protect the quarterbacks, tell him to go down. He's running around back and forth doing some slalom skiing, and then right at the end, he does some late bullshit. Not even a slide. He just dropped down. Like, what do you want him to do? The defenders don't hit him, they hit each
They
other.
hit each other.
And here comes 15 yards for nothing. It's ridiculous.
That was a good little tangent in that. What drive the Mahomes that drives me crazy with Mahomes in like particular is that, like you said, he leans into it. He
Well, he tried
puts
another one. He
himself,
tried flopping. Sorry to cut
and
you off,
it's
but
funny. Who is it? Who is it that Josh Allen called out this preseason for doing it and said, don't do that shit in the preseason or something like that. Save that shit for, week 18 or something like that. I don't know why that just popped in my head, but Josh Allen said that to one of the rookies, I think, in it was Caleb Williams because it was on the HBO show. It was on Hard Knocks. That's what it was. And they're all doing it. It's not just Mahomes. You just see Mahomes do it successfully time and time again, and the NFL is going to protect their baby boy and their product, and they're a team that's going into but going to go, sorry, not into Buffalo. Buffalo's got to come through Arrowhead yet again and play the Chiefs Invitational, that is the AFC Championship.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll just end it like this. I've never been a believer that there's some sinister force and that Roger Goodell's driving this. Oh, we need to push Kansas City to the top. Because at the end of the day, Kansas City, it's not a big city. It's not New York. He's not like, I'm not going to say, but it just, when you see games like this, it's hard to dispute the guys who think there is. Or it's like, obviously, I don't think the Illuminati's sitting there with Goodell and he's got a bunch of lizard people around him. He's got his hood on like Emperor Palpatine and he's like, we shall help the Mahomes. But you watch these calls and if they would have thrown that flag when Mahomes flopped out of bounds, I would have lost it.
That was the one I was thinking of too.
And the nice thing is, at least the people are starting to call it out too. I think it was Aikman. He was like he was very vocal about it. He's like, oh, come
They
on,
both
this
were.
is
Yeah. Joe Buck
ridiculous.
and Aikman were.
So like I'm glad that there is like vocal support amongst people who actually can like instigate, because like it's one thing for you and I or the random Twitter account that's going to post a screenshot and get 60,000 likes. That is never going to change anything. But if you have actual people who have status amongst the NFL who say this is ridiculous, you might be able to get people on board to changing some of these rules.
Yeah, I agree. Let's move to Sunday. First game on Sunday, Rams 22, Eagles 28, the snow game. And I missed a good chunk of this game. I was taking a nap, quite honestly. I needed to after what Michigan State put me through in a good way on Sunday, which we'll get to. I did catch the end, though. Saquon Barkley. I think that's where this needs to start and end. The man's on a mission. And I said, I think a couple weeks ago, where I said he, and we talked about how he didn't play week 18. He wanted to go out earlier in the season when he was about to set his own rook record for yards in a game. He's on a mission to win. And the only thing I think that can stop the Eagles right now, truly, and I think this between the Super Bowl, is they're going to get too cute and not just play it simple. And they could give the ball to Barkley 30 times a game and win a Super Bowl if they wanted to. The way their defense can get pressure on the quarterback. Stafford looks so miserable in the snow. He looked like he didn't even want to be there for parts of the second half. And he is the, I think, like, it's kind of the typical Eagles, and that the only thing that stands in front of them is themselves. And it's easy to say they're going to play a team on Sunday that they've played twice already this season. But I mean, we can get into the actual game. Rams kind of make it a game. It's kind of like the national championship. They make it a game. You think it's a game, and the Eagles say, no, it's not at the end. And it makes for good entertaining purposes, because I was like, oh shit, here we go. Maybe we got a chance. But no, the Eagles were just kind of the better team. This was the atmosphere in the snow game. I go back and I hate the argument that it's like, well, of course the Eagles are going to win in the snow. Also hate the, like, well, the snow's no fun. It's like, well, win more games and get home field advantage. That's kind of how I feel about it. Don't take it away from football. And yes, it's miserable. Yes, it sucks. I wouldn't want to play in that myself personally, but that's why I don't play in the NFL. So Eagles win. I just think they were the better team, and the Rams just, I understand a lot's going on with the LA Fires, and you come off a big win where you just pummel Minnesota, but it just looked offensively like they couldn't really contain anything, and Stafford looked very, very uncomfortable.
Yeah, so I mean, snow games are always fun to watch. You're right, it's different to actually play. But the Rams defense, I mean, I think they did pretty well, other than
Yeah.
two or three blown plays where Saquon takes it like 60, 70 yards and like a 50-yard Jalen Hurts dash. They kept the Eagles in check. Now, obviously, the snow aids in that. It makes it harder to pass, it makes it harder to run a full functioning offense, and you kind of have to dumb it down and play your 12 or even 13 personnel, and it turns into a battle of attrition. But the Rams kept the offense in the game for most of that, and then it was actually the Rams offense that kind of killed them with fumbles. You
Yeah.
talked about turnovers early with the Lions game. The team that lost the turnover battle, and I know we haven't gotten to the Sunday night game yet, but the team that lost the turnover battle in each of the four games lost the game outright. Now, there was no turnovers in Houston, Kansas City, but in the other three, some guys had turnovers, some guys didn't, and the ones who didn't are the ones who won football games. And even still, which is crazy, is the Rams had a chance to win that game. They had two shots, not it in the red zone or at the goal line, but they had two shots on, was it like 4th and 11, 4th and 12, at like the 25 or 30 of Philadelphia. So it's not like they were completely just like there to kill some time and knee the clock out at the end. They still thought they had a shot. I mean, Puka Nacua is making these crazy catches, toe taps and falling down. He's completely overtaken Cooper Kupp as wide receiver one, and it goes both ways. I think Cooper Kupp is not the same guy we saw even 2 years ago, let alone in that Super Bowl season with Stafford where he almost broke Calvin's record. But
Right.
you've got a team with the Rams that are legit. They tried, they lost, and I think you say it perfectly. You don't like playing in the snow. Win some more fucking games if you don't like playing in the snow. But mainly, you said it, the story is Saquon Barkley, one of the greatest running back seasons we've ever seen. Probably, I mean, maybe I'm missing something right off the top of my head. Maybe one of the Derrick Henry Tennessee years is I'm missing, but this may be the best running back season I've seen since I think it was the Adrian Peterson season, like 2012, where I think he was the MVP.
Yeah, this
But
sounds about right.
it's incredible. Between Derrick Henry this season and Saquon this season, I think these two players are leading a revitalization in the running back position, and I'm very glad to see that because I know that's something that we've talked on this podcast before, people have talked about before, and it's like it's frustrating seeing guys who are so talented get paid like shit. You want to talk some stats? If Saquon Barkley's contract, if he played wide receiver, he'd be outside of the top 30 in terms of getting paid.
Yeah.
I think I saw the exact number. Gabe Davis of the Jacksonville Jaguars makes more money than Saquon Barkley. And like that's just ridiculous because you know one guy impacts a football game and the other guy's a field stretcher who you might throw three or four passes to. So hopefully this revitalization can lead to running backs actually getting paid like they matter, because it's one thing to start talking about that they matter again, like we have done, I think, all of this year behind Henry and Saquon. It's another thing to actually have the checkbooks of the owners match that. So
Right.
we'll see what happens with kind of maybe the next generation of Breece and Gibbs and Bijan starting to get their second contracts, if the teams are actually going to be willing to spend money that's worth a damn, or if they're going to be still getting those stupid $10 million a year deals that are like technically just team options year over year over year, like Josh Jacobs in Green Bay.
Yeah, it's a weird one because I still like don't think it is the most valuable position, but it's clear that the top. I mean, like you said, you had two guys that were in the top, I don't know, five or six for the MVP voting at that position. So it's clear that the top, at least, has proven its worth. And that's why, and we're going to talk about somebody else in the next game who I actually didn't necessarily, besides Derrick Henry on the Buffalo side, that while it didn't light up the stat line, I thought was an X factor in that game. And that's kind of going to get us into it. Bills 27, Baltimore 25. This game was every bit as advertised. They went blow for blow with each other. But neither of them had the sexy stat line that I think you were
Oh
expecting
yeah.
from them. I mean, Lamar threw for 250 yards and had 40 rushing yards, but he had the turnovers, and Josh Allen throws for, I think it was only like 130 yards. They only had to throw the ball 22 times. Ran the ball 36 times, 10 of them with Josh Allen. And that's only for 20 yards, mind you, in those 10 carries. Not quite the snow game that the first one was, but snow on the ground. And this was an MVP performance by Josh Allen. And not that it doesn't have to be the I'm going to light the ball on fire. I can throw it super far. I'm going to sling it around the yard like the MVP you saw this season. That was a Mahomes-esque performance for me. And Lamar Jackson was every bit as good, except in one asset, and that's what we keep going back to, and that was turnovers. And I know some of them were not him, but literally the only difference in this game, because they were going blow for blow with each other, and obviously the difference was just one missed catch on a 2-point conversion. But the only difference in this one was turnovers. And Josh Allen didn't turn the ball over. This is going to sound like a weird comparison, but it reminded me of the Lions, and this is weird because the Lions killed them, but the Lions Tennessee game, where the Lions were kind of just given the ball in good opportunities, and Goff had this very pedestrian stat line, but
There were
was able to just
52
keep on
points.
pounding on. And that's kind of what Josh Allen did. He didn't have to light the world on fire because you put him in good spots and easier spots to score and to win the game. And that's what good players do, and that's what he did in this game.
Yeah, I'm with you completely. When you say MVP performance, you're right. It's not the 350 passing yards, 500 all purpose with 18 touchdowns that you might put up in a video game, but he made the MVP plays where he made the throws he was supposed to make. He made the runs, the scrambles he was supposed to make. And as you said, he did not make the plays he wasn't supposed to make, like the guy on the other side, Lamar Jackson. The interception was horrible. I understand
Bad.
there was a guy coming to kill him, but he did nothing. I don't even think he saw the safety. And I think he admitted it in the post game. He's like, or he said he didn't look the safety off. And so like the safety was still in possession or position to like make that catch. That interception looked awful. The fumble, 50-50. It's like you want to say he should protect it better, kind of like what we said with Goff. You can say that, but cold day, harder to hold the football. I don't really know if I'm going to kill him for it the way I would the interception. He was obviously Lamar. This is Lamar speaking. He was incredible in the second half, and he made all the plays in the second half to get him in position to be able to blame a Mark Andrews for dropping that
Yeah.
2-point conversion. But I heard someone pretty kind of phrase it perfectly, where it's like the only reason you think you can blame Mark Andrews is because Lamar played so poorly in the first half that you needed to come back in the second.
Yeah.
So you needed to be in a situation where Andrews had to make that catch. Now, granted, Mark Andrews didn't
Fumbled it.
help anybody out when he fumbled it the first time trying to cut
Yeah.
up field like he's Chris Johnson. It's like, dude, maybe take a page out of Tyler Lockett's playbook and just fall down on the ground. It's okay. Live to fight another down. You've already got 20 yards on the play. You don't need to keep going.
Or had you even seen the zoom out? The zoom out was like, it's going to be hard to describe. It was three players over here, Mark Andrews going this way, and he was trying to cut back this way. The end zone was this way with players over here, and that he just, instead of going towards the end zone where no other players were, he went backwards where the other team had multiple guys, coming in on.
Yeah, no, it was obviously less than ideal performance from Andrews, but I can't sit here and blame a tight end when you have turnovers from your most important position. Also, you want to talk about running the football. I don't think Derrick Henry, maybe I'm kind of missing something on the stat line, but I think the Ravens kind of found themselves in a similar spot where Derrick Henry getting 16 rushes is kind of a low number.
Yeah, I mean, he was like good, but not the X factor, if that makes sense. And that's what it was, kind of one of those things. It's like one of those things where they kind of said, okay, Lamar beat us and Lamar beat himself, right? And like, okay, well, like Henry's going to get his, but if we can make sure that it's Lamar beating us and not him, we feel we have a better chance. And that ultimately was successful.
Yeah, that's fair. Last thing on that game, I think it sets up an incredible matchup. Part four of the Brady Manning recreation 2.0. Maybe Manning will finally get one over on Brady. We'll find out on Sunday, but I think you can kind of have a little bit of a, I don't want to say referendum, but I think you can cap a little bit of Lamar Jackson's kind of status amongst people, because it's like, are you ever going to win a big game? You can get all the MVPs in the world, but it's kind of like Aaron Rodgers the late years, where it's like you can be the back-to-back MVP of the year, but if you're losing to San Francisco at home and then you're getting your shit pumped in the other game, once again, I guess by San Francisco, this time on the road, what exactly are we doing here? That doesn't mean you're not a great player. It's just there's limits of how high people or people can talk about you if you always come up short. Yeah. I guess give the
Agreed.
MVP to Josh Allen.
Unfortunately, that game does not count for anything in the
I kind of knew that, but I'd never really officially known when they closed the ballots. But thankfully, I think it was who was on that call? Was that
That was
Tony
Tony
and
Romo.
I think it was Tony who was like, yeah, unfortunately the votes have already been cast, so nothing that we see here will influence that, which is what it is. We'll see what happens. I think I mentioned this last week. I really don't care who wins this, where if we're only talking about the regular season, I don't have enough of a read or strong enough opinion on either guy. They both had sensational seasons, but one of them's gonna have to win it.
Yeah, I lean Lamar, but like you said, I don't. I think you can kind of go
It'd
either
just be a
way.
sour taste giving him back-to-back
That he lost,
MVPs
and
with
that he
those kinds of
lost.
losses.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I agree.
So, is what it is. Conference. You want to do some conference title previews?
Yeah, for the NFC, the early game, Commanders at the Eagles. They'll head to the Lincoln. Eagles are a 6-point favorite. I kind of think this is anybody's game, and like I mentioned when in the Rams, as we went through that game, is I think it's kind of like the Lions, and that like the Lions just have to not beat or the Eagles just have to not beat themselves, and you can simplify the game by just giving the ball to Saquon and letting Saquon do his thing, and I think that's a successful recipe against a Washington team that struggles against the run. And not only that, I think that's a successful recipe against anybody in the NFL the way Saquon's played this year. But they do try to overcomplicate it sometimes. And the fact that it's their third matchup, like, and I know they split in the regular season, but it can go either way in that aspect, and that both these teams know each other too well to where I don't think it's an advantage for either of them, if that even makes sense. But I am going to take the Eagles in this one. I think that the fact that they have seen Jaden Daniels and are going to be able to make him probably the most uncomfortable he's been in these playoffs, despite what Detroit was throwing at them, in terms of an atmosphere. I like the Eagles. I don't like them big. I think it's going to be a very close game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna kind of rephrase everything you said, and I'm gonna recap or preview this game the exact same way I previewed the Lions game last week. The Eagles are a better team if you stick to the run and don't lose the turnover battle 5-1, and don't get caught up in some smartest man in the room syndrome, like you said. Don't get overly fancy like what Detroit did, and I think you beat Washington. I'll say 27-20.
Yeah, I'll go 24-20.
Bills Chiefs.
Bills Chiefs, Kansas City is a 2-point favorite. This one is at Arrowhead. I don't know, man, because this is the I hate saying this because it's like this is the best shot that Josh Allen has had. I'm sure we've said that every time they've played
We
these
said it
four.
last year.
Yeah, we said it last year. And we said it the year before when they had that crazy game where they went back and forth with each other. I don't know. I unfortunately think the voodoo is the voodoo, and it's just never going to happen. The Bills on the road in Arrowhead, I think they're humming at a clip, and I do worry a little bit for the Bills in terms of was McDuffie. I know he played in that game. He's going to be healthy for that game for the Chiefs.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. I worry a little bit about the Bills kind of not being able to go all explosively nuclear, and the Chiefs are just not going to give them a game with turnovers like the Ravens did. So you're going to have to make explosive plays. You're going to have to be able to score to win this game. And I worry a little bit on the road with the Bills' ability to do that against a very, very good defense.
Yeah, I'm gonna once again parrot something you said last week. I'm gonna go with the Chiefs, not because I think they've been a more impressive team this season, not because I think Mahomes has been better than Josh Allen this year, because he hasn't. I'm going with them because until somebody beats them, how can you bet against them? Like, what are you supposed to do? Also, this time it's in Arrowhead. If you wanted me to believe that the Bills could do it at home, I'd say yeah, I might be willing to buy into it, but I
Same.
bought into it last year and they got beaten. So I think that Kansas City knocked off the rust against the Texans. I think they have a healthy team. I think they're ready to go. And like you said, I don't think they're going to give away cheap possessions like Lamar did, so that the Bills can get kind of maybe not free points, but some quick, easy points. And at that point, give me Mahomes. What am I supposed to say?
Yeah, I'm going to pick a score 22 to 20.
You're going low scoring.
Yeah.
I'm going to go. I say low scoring as if I can sit here and say the Chiefs are getting to 30, even though they haven't done it all year on a real team. But give me 24-20 with this one.
Okay. All right. So that's the NFL preview. We kind of wanted to mention the coaching. So two of the seven vacancies have been had. Vrabel, we talked about last podcast, takes the Patriots job. I think unsurprising to most, and that he was a player there and all that good stuff. And I actually like the hire. I think he's going to do well there. Ben Johnson is the new one. That happens obviously yesterday. Just, like you said, 48 hours or not even after his season with the Lions ends, he takes the Bears job in division. I mean, it makes sense for me. The only thing that doesn't make sense and why you would take that, and you got a GM that might not be there when you're there in terms of if this doesn't go well in year one or year two, he's probably gone before you are. I think in a lot of respects, and then you have a boss that didn't hire you, and you've got a front office that has really, really struggled to make good decisions for decades now. But on the other side, you have a lot of weapons on offense. You have a young quarterback that you're going to be able to develop. It's going to be on you, and I think that can come with some pressure too, and that you're going to be the guy that's going to be trusted and blamed for whatever Caleb Williams does from here on out. But in terms of, and we can rank the spots that are left in terms of what was out there. I actually think, besides maybe, and it didn't make sense for a first-time head coach for me to go to like a Jerry's World Cowboys situation, I think this actually made the most sense for him.
Yeah, I don't want to rank them yet. I'd rather leave that for maybe next week when we don't have as much to talk about. But I'm with you in the sense that Ben Johnson, I've said this to everyone, Ben Johnson was always going to go to whatever team had the quarterback that he believed in the most. Now, whether that was Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville or Caleb Williams in Chicago or even the Raiders rumors, maybe they promised him they were going to trade up for
Sure.
Shedeur Sanders if he wanted that or whatever the discussions might have been. He was never going to tie himself to a quarterback that he didn't believe in, and this just kind of shows you. And I think maybe most people around the league, especially at this point with Trevor Lawrence's shine kind of fading away with him just repeatedly not doing much in Jacksonville, I think this was always going to be the obvious one. So
Yeah.
I think we'll do, at least me specifically, I haven't done any kind of research on the jobs yet, and maybe most of the candidates. So I'm still kind of waiting
Yeah.
to see these people get hired because we know Aaron Glenn and Ben Johnson, but that's because we're in Detroit, not because we're
Right.
sitting here and we're super sleuths and all the assistant coordinators around the league. So I'm
Yeah.
gonna leave that for another week.
To the college game, the last week we can touch the college world. Ohio State 34, Notre Dame 23. Notre Dame just enough at the end to keep me from turning my TV off. But this game was largely Ohio State from the finish. I mean, Notre Dame goes on this, you put it best in the group chat, a service academy like drive. And I saw all the memes of like Riley Leonard on this. I always get his name messed up, but Leonard on the sidelines being like war attrition, like veteran after D-Day. So they ran him 9 times on one drive, just taking hit for hit. And while it looked cool and was dominant, and it was a 10-minute drive, and you're like, whoa, that's Notre Dame football. My first immediate thought was, you're just not going to be able to do that for 60 minutes and win. It's impossible, no matter who you are, like, let alone with the firepower that Ohio State has. And they had firepower. They really didn't have any trouble scoring at all in the first half. Pretty much every time they touched the ball, they were able to. While it wasn't always like 100% smooth, they got plays. They got Jeremiah Smith going. They got Will Howard had a great first half. I think he was
He
14
was
for
perfect.
15 for it. Was he perfect? Perfect.
Well, I mean, like, he had the one incompletion that was in Trevion's hands and it kind of got wrestled out by
Yeah.
the corner. But I said this to some friends as well. Will Howard played that perfect first half. He used his legs when he needed to.
Yep.
He didn't face a lot of pressure. There's a couple of throws where there's a guy in his face or a guy rushing him. He made the throws he needed to. He hit every open receiver. I can't say the same for Riley Leonard. Will Howard was perfect in that first half, but I guess one thing that was funny was, I mean, I don't know if you saw this, but Riley Leonard went to puke after that first drive. That's how tired he was.
Yeah. Well, he just looked on the sidelines like whoa.
Even before this, like, you look at that, I think it was the third down play at the goal line, and he's sitting there hunched over it. And,
Yeah.
like, I'm sure Marcus Freeman's like, run it again, Riley.
Yeah.
Let's go.
And they kind of like, can you blame him though? Like, they
No.
really could. Like, their big running back had a horrible, Love had a terrible day. Like, they couldn't run the ball. They couldn't throw the ball. Really, the only plays they had at all, even when they were able to move the ball a little more in the second half, was Riley Leonard scramble and find a pass, or Riley Leonard design run right up the middle. Those were really the only two plays that worked the entire night for him.
Yeah, you mentioned Ohio State's offense, absolutely methodical in that first half, scored on every time or scored every time they touched the ball. Notre Dame's offense kind of killed themselves in the second drive, and then I think in the third drive it was the same thing where it was just kind of
Yeah.
like a little bit of penalty here or negative play there, and they kept giving it back. And then Ohio State, it was just it was methodical. It was
Yeah.
seven plays, 75 yards, touchdown, eight plays, 75. There wasn't much in. I don't even think, like you mentioned, it wasn't always smooth sailing. I don't recall, especially in the first half, them really facing some kind of long third downs. Everything
Oh.
to me was they got the run game going when they needed to. Judkins with those nuclear runs, where it looked like, I mean, I
Yeah.
talked about at the beginning, Kirby Joseph with cinder blocks on his feet. Jesus Christ, Quinshon Judkins needs some top end speed. The way he got
Yeah, he
caught
did
by
get
those guys
caught.
on that
Yeah.
run was kind of sad. But
And
yeah, I
then did
mean,
you notice this is they ended up scoring, so it didn't matter. But they left him in for the next play to get to run.
Well, I think they took a timeout. There was like an injury timeout, so he got a little bit of like his breath back. But I
Okay.
did see that. But yeah, so they just did whatever they wanted. It was kind of this was a mismatch. I know we've kind of hyped up Notre Dame, and I'll talk a little bit about this with my own personal battles on social media and maybe some narratives that I think are being falsely pushed about this Notre Dame team. But they really didn't belong in the same field as Ohio State, and I think, like you mentioned, that Notre Dame did just enough to keep it close, but that's because Ohio State let them. Ryan Day and Chip Kelly got into their turtle shell. They started calling the game scared. I saw one thing in the second half before the Jeremiah Smith throw that effectively ended the game. Ohio State only had three pass plays. Like, come on, like that's calling it scared. You're nervous, or maybe not nervous, but you're saying, oh, well, we're up 31-7. We can just sit here and sit on our lead and we don't have to do anything. And you know what? If Emeka Ogbuka doesn't get a ball punched out from behind, like maybe it works out anyway because they were driving. They probably end up scoring on that play. And then once again, it's a three possession game in the fourth quarter and Notre Dame doesn't even make it close from that. But yeah, if you want to say technically Notre Dame got close on the scoreboard, sure, but I don't think they ever belonged on that field. If Ohio State wanted to, and if they could, and they kind of did this, I think, with a couple of the games where they would start quickly and then kind of maybe not totally shut it down, but would change the way they called the aggression. If Ohio State wanted to call games like 2019 LSU did, where it was just everything was bloody murder and everything was a track meet, I think they could have put up 45-50 on Notre Dame.
Yeah, I agree. I think they probably could have done that in all four playoff games, arguably. And really, I mean, they had some blemishes against Texas as that game went on offensively, but and that's because they took away their best player and no one else was able to do that. But really, I hate to say this about Ryan Day because he just did. He's the second, I believe he's now the second youngest head coach to win a national championship behind Urban Meyer by 1 year. When he was at Florida and he won the first one in 08. Ryan Day had to just let this get out of the way of this team. That's how this team won. Once he got out of the way and let this team be this team, they were the best team all along. They spent the most money on this roster. They were the most talented team at every skill position. They had older depth. I don't want to say depth. Older veteran guys who had been there in the trenches, like Jack Sawyers of the world. They had guys come in and play roles on the offensive line, which struggled in during times of the season with some injuries. Guys like I don't remember his name, the guard that ended up playing left tackle the whole year. Like this
Donovan
team,
Jackson.
there you go. This team just needed Ryan Day to get out of the way and be this team. He didn't have to do anything in particular. He recruited all these guys. He sent the message to these guys. He got these guys fired up in the locker room. That I don't want to simplify his job to that, but that's what he needed to do, and he did it. So good on him. That's good coaching, I guess.
I agree. I guess maybe the last couple of like talking points. And maybe this was one play that I thought was personally funny and it stuck with me. And I think it kind of symbolizes just how dominant Ohio State was. In the second half, they ran a read option and Henderson didn't take the ball, but he ran the fake. Henderson went 6 yards before somebody touched him. And
Oh,
that's not because people didn't think he had the ball, that's because nobody could touch him. Like the offensive line blocked that well. And then Will Howard, who actually had the ball, also went 7 yards before he was touched. That was like usually the read option is you stare at the face of an edge rusher and you make the decision, do I pull it or do I let my running back have it? And one of the guys is going to get hit. There was nobody in the face. Like that was just Ohio State. It was a different talent level, and that's where I'll get into that part of the narrative later. But the other thing, the Ohio State defensive backs, they got sloppy, which allowed Notre Dame to kind of extend drives in the second half and score touchdowns when maybe they should have been punting. I mean that was something I talked about last week, where if Notre Dame wants to get at them, that's the place to do it. They're kind of the weak point of the team. It's just you don't have the receivers to do it. And the only reason they had to begin doing it is because they were so far down that the run game was gone. They didn't do it by choice. So I guess there's that. And the last thing that was a major question mark is what's Marcus Freeman doing kicking a field goal down 16?
What was that? I didn't just I that made no sense, and that was the ultimate doy doy when he just doinked it off the thing.
Yeah, like sure, 4th and 9 or 4th and 10, whatever it was at the goal line, like that's not a favorable call, but football is a game of possessions. Nothing you do by kicking a field goal helps you out, especially with the time that was left. Like, you want to say this is the second quarter and you're down 16. I might be okay with saying, yeah, go ahead, kick the field goal. You're only going to touch the ball one, maybe two more times. How are you settling for three? You're not
Yeah.
gaining anything by doing that. So that
Completely
was
agree.
completely bewildering to me. And then the last thing I want to say, maybe before I'm kind of done with college, because I don't have that much more, is I think maybe we got a little premature on the whole Notre Dame is back thing, because they were not the same. Dude,
I'm
like,
not
I'm
sure I
sorry,
agree.
what?
I'm not sure I agree.
So, did we watch the same football game?
So, okay, but what did Ohio State do to every other team in the country this year?
I agree. I'm not saying that.
In the
I'm
playoffs,
not
sorry,
saying that,
Michigan
like,
beat them.
this is suddenly like a strictly Notre Dame thing. It's just the concept that we have always associated with modern day Notre Dame is good program, but cannot be elite because they don't have the athletes, right?
So here's
What
my
did we
kind of
not
take
watch?
is unfortunately I think that's what Notre Dame is. It's like what we've talked about, that's what Penn State is. It's like you can't fire James Franklin because that's what Penn State
Oh, I'm not
is
saying fire Freeman.
that's what Notre Dame is. Notre Dame was not that for the last several years. Now they are what they are. They're back in the sense that they're back to what you just said they were. And my point is going to be is I think more, if there's anybody that can do it, it's a young, like, very likable coach like Marcus Freeman is, but I think in this NIL deal, I don't think they can be anything more than what you just called them because they just won't be able to have the backing financially that many of these programs are willing to give their programs.
And if we want to be, and maybe this is me nitpicking on Notre Dame because I want to try and prove my own point, but if you look at what they played to even get to this game, it was Indiana, choke artists, backup quarterback, Penn
I think
State.
this is slight nitpicking. I agree, but then you what it like who did Georgia play? Like Georgia lost, like who
Backup
did
quarterback. No,
who
look,
yeah
I'm with you.
okay,
I'm with you.
but like who did
I'm
all the
not.
SEC teams? Where were they? Like they could have like who Texas played Arizona State? What like
I'm with you. I'm
it's
not
nitpicking.
trying to indict these people. I'm just saying that, and this is going to take me into, because I have to take a page out of Mike Valeni's book, and I need to get off social media because I go into comments, or maybe I need to get off comment sections, because that's where the idiots with like voices start voicing their opinions, and I don't understand what's going on. What I was telling you before we got on, I'm sitting there in YouTube comment sections arguing with people who tried to make the To try to make this assertion that Notre Dame competed. I don't think they did compete. For the last 35 minutes of the football game, Notre Dame never touched the ball with a chance to tie or take the lead. That doesn't sound like competing to me. I don't know.
Yeah, my thing is just like you're making it personal to Notre Dame. Like it would have been anybody in that spot, is my
You're
point.
probably right. Maybe that's part of it. The other thing is, this was one game. Maybe they play that game 10 times. Ohio State might win 9 of them, but maybe the other 8 are going to be close. Maybe this was, like you say, that perfect storm, the perfect talent, the perfect skill positions, the veterans, the athletes, the coach who finally said, "I'm going to put my ego away." You're right. Maybe this was the perfect storm, and I'm just kind of punching the dead horse already, but.
But Notre Dame is back to what they were. Remember, it's been 12 years since they've been in the national championship now in that A.J. McCarron, Brent Musburger incident game, and his
Yeah.
wife, now wife,
Catherine Webb.
yes, Catherine McCarron now,
Oh, sorry.
and like my like you just said with the. It's the perfect storm of Ohio State was able to pay for all these skill guys that were just going to outmuscle whatever hard-nosed team Notre Dame was going to throw at you. That's going to always be the case now. There's always going to be a team like that. And I just don't think Notre Dame will ultimately be able to get to over the hump because of that. They will never be that team, and there will always have to be that team.
Yeah, I guess maybe the last thing that I thought was funny, and again, this is not me beating the dead horse, but 3rd and 9 and you're leaving Jeremiah Smith on soft coverage with no safety help. I thought that was hilarious. Like,
Yeah.
what are you, this is, again, I don't want to get caught up in the recency bias, but this is the best freshman wide receiver that's been in college football since what, Julio Jones?
Yeah, at least.
Like, what are you doing leaving that with your own corner with no safety help? Well, I thought that was hilarious.
Anything else on the national championship before we end on a positive
No,
Michigan
let's talk
State?
about good things in our lives.
Michigan State basketball, or should I call them the number eight team in the country right now? Two wins since we last spoke. Kind of a sloppy win against Penn State on Wednesday at home, and then beat Illinois, the big one on Sunday at noon at their place as well. Penn State, I don't have too much to add. It was kind of a sloppy game. It felt like in the first half they were only up by like 8 to 10 the whole time. Felt like they should have been up by 20 the way it was going. And then in the second half they forgot how to play defense and they couldn't guard anybody. The bigs kind of had their way with our bigs in the paint, and they started hitting some shots, and that game got down to, it was weird because it felt like Penn State was beating us by 20 in the second half, and it stayed at like 5 to 8 a lead, like our lead the entire time. So just a really weird game. Yeah, I don't know. Penn State is a team that's probably not going to make the tournament. So you at that point were 6-0 against probably what I would argue are six of the probably bottom eight teams in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I agree.
And that kind of takes us into Saturday, 80-78. Michigan State gets the big win. I have a couple of different thoughts in this game. The first is Jaden. I still want to see Jaden Akins step up and be the guy in those moments. I know it was kind of a joint effort. I thought Trey Holloman had one of his best games as a Spartan, especially early on in that one, because they shot the ball horribly. And they kind of got going in the second half, and that was the difference, because Illinois shot the ball horribly in the second half. But in that first half, I thought Holloman provided a nice lift. And you can't, you're just, what my doubts are with this team moving forward is you're just not going to be able to beat good teams like that consistently, shooting the ball like that. And they were able to be the benefactor of a lot of calls in this game. I also thought, like, we also got hosed on a couple calls too, because it was just a very whistle happy game. But the fact of the matter is their best player played 4 minutes in that game and he had 3 points. And you're not going to be able to do that. You're not going to get lucky like that every time. The free throw shooting in the first half was bad. I don't know. I had some frustrations, especially with the effort in the first half. And then the second half, I thought the defensive effort, and again, missing their best player, was as good as it's ever been. It's an Izzo team. They don't give up. I feel like we're saying the same thing every week, but this team refuses to lose in that they just play how they need to play. And you got guys stepping up and playing roles. Today I'm going to highlight Colin Carr and his role. He also had one of his best games. He slowly begins to develop as an offensive player. He's hit three threes now. He hit one in the Penn State game. So that's coming along. Jeremy Fears, well, he talks his shit on the court for sure, and he can get a little all over the place sometimes. He's finally the point guard that Izzo's needed. He controls the game so well and everything runs through him. It's a guy you finally trust with the ball in your hands after a long-awaited time since Cassius Winston. By the way, Trey Holloman was rocking the number five with the white headband, and I was having like same body type too,
Oh
like
yeah. No,
size, like,
he's done that a couple times over the years.
yeah, I was like, oh, it was like the ghost of Cassius out there. But overall, a good effort against a very good team that proved to me that we're at least somewhat for
Best win of the
real.
season.
Yeah.
Home and out best win of
Yes.
the season.
And I think we've said it week after week, and that we love the way this team fights and plays like an Izzo team, but I want to see them play competition. Like, their two losses are to arguably the only two decent teams they played all year, and then they finally got a real win. And may that game probably goes different if it's at Illinois, but you know what? You got to find ways to win games in the Big Ten, and that's the top four team in the Big Ten. And it proves me to have some faith as we go. Kind of, I mean, they're going to play Rutgers. The 6 days off in the middle of this is ridiculous, because I looked in February. They're going to have some weeks where they play three times, so they have a 6 day layover. I know they're going to MSG to play Rutgers in a trap spot where they've lost a couple of times in the last couple of years to some decent Rutgers teams, and Rutgers is early on looked like they were a really good team, kind of lost their stride, and now it looks like they're on the comeback again. Have two really good freshmen that can are kind of matchup issues for us. And there were a couple of matchup issues for Illinois that I noticed that they didn't really necessarily exploit. They looked pretty sloppy in the second half offensively. Any thoughts? I know I kind of just went on a tangent of how much I love this team.
No, I'll minimal. You said effort and how it lacked in the first half, and I'll highlight that with a couple things. Our defense was very poor to begin with. They killed us with back cuts. That's an effort thing when you lose your guy or you don't chase your guy. And the early battle on the boards, we got destroyed, especially on the offensive end. That's effort. And that's why Illinois controlled most of that first half. Now, and that's even without their best player. Is it Yakoponis, or I don't know how you say his last
I
name?
just kept seeing JK, like, because he's from Lithuania.
Yeah, whatever his name is, it was without that. Obviously, the Will Riley or whatever his name Riley kid is showed up and just started draining threes from anywhere he wanted on the first half. So like, it's not like it was a clinic by Illinois. It was a little bit of hero ball, but the effort was not there with the back cuts and the offensive rebounds. They tightened that up as the first half went on. That's why they were able to close it down, and that's why in the second half, as soon as they decided to put their bodies on an orange jersey, it kind of became a Michigan State controlled game, and Illinois was the one who needed to kind of stay alive by just playing little hero ball, jack up threes, and they didn't really know what they were doing once the two kind of Illinois stars were on the bench.
And like you said, the effort thing that turned around in the second half, as I mentioned, there was some bad like free throw misses in the first half, is they missed some free throws down the stretch and we didn't. That also played a huge role at the end.
Yeah, I think they had I think one, maybe two front ends of a 1-1, and then you're right, just some of the other little ones that kill you.
But that's kind of all I got. This team's for real. They're fun. There's no star in this team. Any given day, somebody's going to give you double digits. Jaden Akins is the only one that averages over double digits, but I think they have nine guys that average over 6 points. Just popped in my mind, Frankie Fiddler had another nice game. He slowly kind of, he had a, he was kind of the star in the Penn State game. I forgot to mention that. He went for his MSU career high 17 points. He's slowly coming back into, we thought he was going to get phased out. He's now got to be phased in the way he's played the last week and a half.
Yeah, nothing more from me. I'm ready to kind of close it out. If there's anything else, last words for you?
No, man, go green. That's all we got to look forward to now. Chiefs
Go
voodoo.
white.